This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
Margaret, October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and from the White House to the sports arena, people are very engaged in supporting friends and family who are facing this serious health problem. Let's spend a few moments talking about the sets of problems and how people might help their friends understand this issue.
Well, you know, one thing we can say is that this is a health problem that has garnered national attention and strategies to ensure that people have access to the kind of early screening and detection that we believe can save lives. And it offers somewhat of a lesson for us in all of our conversations on health reform, I think. Certainly the breast and cervical cancer early detection program makes mammograms and office visits for screening for breast cancer available to women at no charge who are of low income and uninsured. And this is one of those few programs that also doesn't restrict based on people's immigration status. So I think that's been a real positive around bringing a very necessary service to women.
That's a very good point. And screening really remains a very powerful tool. Study after study has shown that regular mammograms can help lower the number of deaths from breast cancer for many women. And last year, we had extensive conversations with people about the preventative task force recommendations, questioning the benefits of mammogram screening for women under 50, had a lot of people opining on who should get screened and exactly when.
That's right. And in addition to the focus on screening, I think two of the most powerful areas of interest are on prevention of breast cancer and treatment. Certainly on the prevention side, there is a lot of activity going on trying to understand what really causes it. We know that genetic conditions are a piece of this, but certainly there's a lot of interest in whether there are environmental causes as well. And then on the treatment end, again, looking back at genetics and the particular types of tumors, how do we target the right treatment to the right woman that's the most minimally invasive and the most effective? And I think that's all very important research that's going on.
It is. Margaret, today we have a very dynamic guest, Mayor Joseph Curtatone from Somerville, Massachusetts. He spoke at our Weitzman Symposium last June about Shape Up Somerville, an innovative community-based program that has transformed the town of Somerville into a healthy place to live. Mayor Curtatone is a critical thinker on the issues of policy and practice, and his work at Shape Up Somerville is one that I think the country is following, and we're happy that he can join us today.
I'm looking forward to talking to him again, and no matter what the story, you can hear all of our shows on our website, chcradio.com. Subscribe to iTunes to get our show regularly downloaded, or if you'd like to hang on to our every word and read a transcript of one of our shows, come visit us at chcradio.com. And think about becoming a fan of Conversations on Healthcare on Facebook, and also follow us on Twitter.
And as always, if you have feedback, email us at chcradio.com. We'd love to hear from you. Before we speak with Mayor Curtatone, let's check in with our producer, Lauren Bonner, with headline news.
I'm Lauren Bonner with this week's headline news. The administration wants to make sure that the youngest and most vulnerable Americans are not being denied health coverage based on pre-existing conditions. In a letter to the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, Department of Health Secretary Kathleen Sebelius outlined a range of steps that can be taken to help preserve coverage options for children, regardless of their health status. Insurance plans in several states have stopped writing new child-only policies because the health care reform law prohibits them from discriminating against sick children. Insurers have had to come up with ways to prevent families from only buying insurance for their children when they become sick. HHS has been working with states to encourage them to come up with their own solutions, such as requiring that insurers sell child-only policies if they want to sell family coverage, establishing open enrollment periods that treat healthy and sick kids identically, allowing families to buy into Medicaid or CHIP coverage even if they don't qualify, and ensuring that states' high-risk pools offer a full range of pediatric benefits. A federal judge in Florida has ruled that a legal challenge to the new health care law by officials from 20 states can move forward. Florida Attorney General Bill McCollum, who has joined in the effort to repeal the health care law, says all states have to do to spoil the new law is to get just one part of it thrown out by the courts.
If any one portion of this laws declared unconstitutional, like the individual mandate requiring you to buy health insurance without or pay a penalty. If that's declared unconstitutional, the whole law goes down.
The full hearing is scheduled for December 16th. Meanwhile, the Virginia lawsuit will be ruled on by the year's end over the same issue, the constitutionality of the health care reform law, and whether the federal government has the power to impose the insurance requirement. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has found that Hispanics can expect to live longer than whites by more than 2 years and blacks by more than 7 years. The CDC report is the first of its kind to calculate Hispanic life expectancy in the United States. A leading theory is that Hispanics who manage to immigrate to the U.S. are among the healthiest from their countries. The report is the strongest evidence yet of what some experts call the Hispanic paradox: longevity for a population with a large share of poor, undereducated members that are normally linked with life-shortening health problems. The news coincides with more positive findings for Hispanics. The Association of American Medical Colleges reports that more minority students are entering U.S. medical schools, and the increase is most pronounced among Hispanics. The group saw first-year enrollment jump to 1,539 in 2010, 9 percentage points above 2009 levels. This week on Conversations, we're learning about an innovative community-based intervention that's now serving as a national model to fight childhood obesity. Shape Up Somerville originally began as a research study at Tufts University for overweight first through third graders in the Somerville, Massachusetts public school system. 7 years later, the program has engaged and transformed the health of the entire Somerville community. Somerville is a compact city right outside of Boston with lots of public transportation and commercial squares. Transforming the roadways was relatively easy. Since 2004, over 1,000 crosswalks have been stripped, more bike lanes added, and more walkable and safer routes to schools have been carved out. The city has also rebuilt and added parks. But it didn't stop there. All sectors of the community were encouraged to step up. Shape Up Somerville went on to introduce healthy eating in collaboration with the introduction of more physical activity. The program worked with the Somerville School Food Service Department to enhance the quality and quantity of healthy foods for students. Schools now purchase locally grown produce for their school lunches. The town has 2 community gardens and a farmers market. It even launched 2 community-supported agriculture sites where residents can purchase shares of nearby farmers' crops. Changes have also been made in restaurants to offer things like smaller portions and more visible nutrition labeling. As the country becomes involved with efforts to fight childhood obesity through First Lady Michelle Obama's Let's Move campaign, Somerville, Massachusetts is becoming the national example for all communities to introduce healthy living. Let's turn now to our interview with Mayor Joseph Curtatone, who can tell us more.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. Today we're speaking with Somerville, Massachusetts Mayor Joseph Curtatone. The leadership behind Shape Up Somerville, a campaign to fight childhood obesity on all fronts. Welcome, Mayor Curtatone. You know, over the past 7 years, the town of Somerville, Massachusetts has worked to transform itself into the urban ideal of a healthy place to live and raise children. When the project began, 46% of your elementary school kids were overweight.
Right.
And that inspired you to launch a series of initiatives. Can you tell us about those initiatives and what have been the tangible results of your efforts to date?
First of all, thanks for having me on your show. And more importantly, thanks for having this conversation. It's important that we elevate the social consciousness of this entire country, because it's not about losing weight. This is about how we live. We saw, by taking a community-based environmental approach, changing the environment, which affects how we decide, again, how we play, how we eat, our school children gained 1 less pound than surrounding communities. Now, that plays out over time. That has positive consequences. But what we took out of this and what we extrapolated is how we can adopt citywide policies and initiatives to incentivize how you act, to help you make decisions to eat smart and play hard and live well. And it's been a great success. We've seen more kids, from studies, we know more people active in recreational activities. We're getting positive results in terms of people accessing good and wholesome food opportunities that we're creating across the city. We just see a city more active, more healthy, and obviously in terms of reversing the trends of childhood obesity, that is the greatest challenge to health across this country.
Mayor, the First Lady, Michelle Obama, has specifically promoted Shape Up Somerville as a model in her national Let's Move campaign, which we all know about now and is aimed at ending childhood obesity within a generation. And in her campaign, she always says it's going to take all of us to make it happen. Now, you know, as mayor, that usually means building community collaboratives, and your support can sometimes come from unexpected places, and your opposition can sometimes come from unexpected places. Maybe you could tell us who have your partners been in this project, and how did you get people on board who might not have been likely supporters at the get-go?
Well, I think you bring up a critical point. It is a challenge to take on and reverse the trend of childhood obesity. And what I mean by that, no one elected official, government leader, no one change in any health regulation or policy is going to fix this. This is not a technical problem where you can just change a law and someone make a proclamation and it's going to change itself. We're talking about social change. And we've seen this as a nation as we've taken on tobacco and anti-tobacco campaigns, anti-smoking campaigns. And it's going to take us all. It's going to take a community, and every community across this country, every institution and organization across this country to raise their social consciousness, to change the way we live, how we eat, how we play. And I'll tell you, we've had no challenges, and because we understood and took this on as an adaptive challenge. Sometimes when you see, and communities do this for the right reasons, where they just come out right away and ban trans fats or pass this regulation or some other regulation, and they're right, those are good policy decisions, you might get resistance because you haven't given the work back to the community to do. What we did in Somerville was, one, I think we ignited and energized people's values. As this is still a value-based challenge, you know, and everybody wants a community that is healthy, place to live, to work, to raise your family, to send your kids to those schools, and everybody can align with that. And if you can see how their individual goals and their task, you know, if I'm a businessman, I'm a part of a social service agency, I'm just a parent, how those align with that value, they are willing to take on this challenge. And we were able to step back and give them the work, and the community really just took this on. It has been the community, and it is a community-based approach. And that's the only way it can work, and it's the only way it can sustain.
Mayor, you're a great turner of phrases, and I really like the one that you use, the healthy choice must be the easy choice.
Yes.
You've applied this to everything from school lunch choices to recreational options that promote physical activity. What are some of the public policy initiatives you've championed that you think can be replicated by other communities who might look to Somerville for best practices that are looking to make healthy choices the easy choice?
Every decision we make is guided by the tenets of Shape Up Somerville. And why is that the case? Because if you look at Somerville's history, like many communities, especially in the urban core over the last half century, since mid-century, you've seen the consequential connectivity of policy failure, how field policies around land use planning, how we design and place our open recreation spaces, transportation planning, food policy, those all collide. Those all collide over time, and they affect us socially and on our health. And childhood obesity is a consequence of those field policies. So what we recognize is we have to change the environment. And we've taken that approach to one, to really guide us on how we plan our open spaces. We have a very dynamic, aggressive open space initiative to build new parks or build parks in a certain way that are very dynamic, that are very inclusive for people. We've used it in our transportation planning to construct and design more traffic mitigation measures, more pedestrian and bicycle enhancement measures. We've changed our food policy. We've expanded and evaluated the type of recreation program you have, you mentioned. We've tried to develop a host and myriad of opportunities for people to get out again and eat smart and play hard and live well. And again, at the end of the day, this is important because this is where ideology can collide. We're not telling you what to do. We're not going to tell you to go on a diet or how to eat, how to live. However, because that's not the government's responsibility. It is our responsibility as elected officials and as governments to set the stage, set the table, and with good policy and good decision-making that allows you the opportunity to make good choices, that allows the healthy choice to be that easy choice.
Well, Mayor, you're really describing leadership at the local level in all of the work that you're doing. And certainly one issue that faces all of our political leaders in communities is the resources that have dried up over recent years, right? And having adequate resources to make this transformation of communities into healthy ones. So in this time of fiscal challenge, and I know it seems like municipalities are always in a fiscally challenged time, where does the funding for initiatives come from? And we'd be particularly interested in your thoughts on the health care reform bill, the Patient Protection Affordable Care Act, which created that large public health and prevention fund. Do you see this as really providing the kind of support and assistance to cities to make these transformations?
I think that's definitely going to help. However, the one thing I would stress, and I have, that's a good question, because I speak around the country and I've spoken to leaders around the world about this issue, but in this country especially, you know, a local mayor or a city manager or a town administrator or a selectman or councilwoman will say, you know, how do we do it? You know, I don't have the capacity. We don't have the finances. My job is to get this budget in order, the bottom line, get my bond rating up. And I don't know anybody who moves to a city because the budget's balanced and the bond rating's up. I mean, we don't let the finance people run our city. However, we have to guide ourselves a good, sound fiscal policy. But I would say this, Somerville is not a rich community. We spend the least per capita out of any community in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts with a population of 50,000 people or more. But we try to do that smartly. But we also try to leverage our partnerships. We have partnerships with academia. We have partnerships with our local hospitals, with Cambridge Health Alliance. We have partnerships in the business community because we've aligned all our values, and we've challenged people to take on this work. And there are plenty of opportunities to access soft funding through grants, Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, for the CDC, and I know the First Lady will be coming out, and the President will be coming out with initiatives to help communities with tools, with different grants and funding to plan and assess how they can enact good policy changes and good planning to tackle the issue of childhood obesity in their communities. But a lot of these things don't cost money, or it's just really how we reallocate some of the funds we're using. Developing good land use policy doesn't cost any money. It's just setting your priorities. Good food policies in our schools, you know, instead of opening just packaged food, you know, cooking the food on site and having good and wholesome food opportunities, really not a big money investment by the town and municipality. It's reallocating funds. It might be a little bit more, but the quality is going to be better. So a lot of times it's not a big a monetary investment up front. It's setting the stage with good policy, good decision-making, great planning, leveraging your partnerships with the business community, with academia, with the nonprofit agencies. And with that partnership, you can leverage a lot of funding.
This is Conversations in Healthcare. Today, we're speaking with Somerville, Massachusetts Mayor Joseph Curtatone, the leadership behind Shape Up Somerville. Mayor, I love your holistic approach. You've been talking a little bit about transportation and noting that Somerville doubled the number of bicycle lanes on its road. And I'm wondering about the response of the citizens to this. Is it true that you build it and they will come? They've increased the number of people who are out there biking all of the time. And also talk to us a little bit about those in the community who might be economically challenged. And have you done any variations on the theme to make sure that it reaches everyone in the community, your new initiative?
Two great questions. If you build it, they'll definitely come. I'm amazed when we put on just bike lanes, who comes out and rides their bike. And we're seeing more and more people riding. Yesterday, we just did a bike ride across the city. We got on our bike midday here and rode across just to celebrate 10 new miles of bike lanes. And again, we're a community of only 4.1 square miles. And we put up 10 new miles of bike lanes, and it's been fantastic. And we've done a lot of new road work in the city, and some of the bike lanes are on the bumpiest roads, and still people are out there. They embrace it. Just like we build a new park, people love it because they want, you know, people want those opportunities to get out and be active and live healthy lifestyles. And the other great question you had is, how do you reach out or engage those more economically disadvantaged? And that's important because the most susceptible, the population greatest at risk are the racial and ethnic minorities. Some of them, we speak 52 languages from countries around the world. And we see the challenge on this issue on a couple of fronts. One, We've had positive results when we kicked off Shape Up Somerville, because as we trained and had programs with teachers and students, we were very sensitive to the different language and diversity issues in the city. We sent out communications in several different languages. We talked to those parents. As we trained on cooking skills, we were sensitive to cultural needs. But also the challenge comes in our school transient population. Sometimes children come in mid-year, don't stay the whole time. They pop in, they pop out. And you want to have sort of that sustained engagement. And so our focus, as we've used data to guide us all along the way, is you'll see the next generation of Shape Up really focusing on the more ethnic and racial minority communities here in the city.
And Mayor, one area where municipalities can make a difference in healthcare and in healthcare costs is with their own employees. Have you instituted any wellness or health promotion policies for your own Somerville city employees that you think are particularly effective, and any outcome data on these initiatives to share?
We've done a host of things with our employees, from having a fitness buddy program, partner up with someone, a mayor's fitness challenge. We've done health fairs. We also provide different mechanisms with some of our employees. We might reimburse you for your gym or yoga or health club membership. We've done a myriad of different things to educate them and invest in their wellness. And we're going to ramp that up even more, especially up front. We have a healthier workforce. It's going to be a more productive workforce. There's a invest in that. And financially upfront is going to save us money in the long run. And we know that very well, because our healthcare costs went up 19% in this fiscal year. And in the last 10 years, our healthcare costs have tripled from $12 million a year to almost $40 million a year. And that's unsustainable. So in addition to all the healthcare reform that's going on, we need to continue to invest in our human resources and their health. So,
Mayor, when you look around the country and the world, what do you see in terms of innovations, and who gets you excited, and who should our listeners at Conversations be keeping an eye on?
You know, we're starting to hear more and more and hearing from our colleagues around the world as well. Well, one conversation we had initially a few years ago was with the country of Singapore. We advised them on their launch of their version of Shape Up as well. This weekend, we're having our final Summer Streets activity. One of the things we did in summer was is with our limited space, and only 5% of our land area is open of recreation spaces, how do we recapture our streets for more activity? So we have a Summer Streets program that was really focused on what they do in Colombia, in Bogota, Colombia. And what we'll be doing is closing down our 3rd Street, which started this summer, which is about one of our longest streets, and it's about a mile long. And there'll be nothing but recreational activity, community engagement, and a good, healthy food options for people to enjoy, sort of this roving urban park program across the city. And those are examples we've got from around the world. And again, if we wrote, as you see people's social consciousness raise on this issue, I think you're going to see this issue play out in all parts of the world.
Great. And today we've been speaking with Somerville, Massachusetts Mayor Joseph Curtatone, the leadership behind Shape Up Somerville, a campaign to fight childhood obesity, and Mayor, if I can paraphrase you or quote you, a campaign to get people to work hard, play hard, and live well. Mayor, thank you so much for joining us today.
All right. Eat smart, play hard, live well.
Thank you.
All right.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives.
This week's bright idea focuses on an innovative program from Somerville, Massachusetts. Hallmark Health's Match.doc service helps connect young patients with primary care providers. The first session took place in a Somerville restaurant last week. Modeled on popular speed dating programs, Match.doc brings together groups of young patients and providers, pairing them for short, informal conversations in which patients voice their needs and physicians explain how they can help. During the session last week, 5 physicians and a nurse practitioner sat at tables in the back of the restaurant. Patients received sheets with each provider's picture, credentials, and special medical interests, along with suggested questions and a space for taking notes. During the short meeting, patients asked the providers about their hours, services, referrals, and insurance coverage, while also discussing their family and professional lives. Both the patients and the providers seemed to welcome the opportunity to have a real conversation with each other, and many left the session having found a successful match. Hallmark Health aims to market Match.doc towards young people in their 20s and 30s who are the least likely to have found a primary care provider, yet most likely to be affected down the road by the growing shortage of primary care providers. The Association of American Medical Colleges predicts that within 10 years, the U.S. will suffer from a shortage of 90,000 physicians alone, making it difficult for young people to find a family physician whom they know and trust. And going without primary care can have serious consequences for patients in any age group. For example, not receiving regular health screenings can mean missing the early warning signs of conditions like diabetes or elevated cholesterol. Postponing health care is not only risky, but it can lead to more medical expenses for a patient and for the society. But with Match.doc's help, young patients in the Boston area have the opportunity to sidestep some of these medical and financial problems and find a provider who's right for them. Now that's a bright idea. This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli, Peace and Health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of Wesleyan University at WESU, streaming live at WESUFM.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.